ECW Press presents Lord Nelson Tavern, written by Ray Smith and narrated by Daniel McIver. 1. Two Loves. Everyone was in love with Francesca. Afternoons they would skip classes to sit around the tavern talking about her, her beauty. Her eyes! Now her eyes are the mystery of the universe, the light of day, the movement of music, her legs, Gould. Her legs have the elegant curves of an eagle's flight, of a beach shimmering in the sun, of for Christ's sake, from Naseby. The important thing is how good a lay she is. No one knew this, for none of them had even spoken to her, not even to Paolo, the painter, whose sexual successes were legendary. I'm not interested in princesses, he said with a smirk as he went off to paw a third-year sculpture student. They tried gathering information about her, her name, what classes she was in, then, amazingly, her faculty. Science! For God's sake, incredible! A fucking physics major! What a fucking waste! Gloom. They had no openings. Gould and Paleologue were in English, Naseby in philosophy, something few of them remembered in later years, Grilse in economics, DiPaolo in the art school a few blocks away. They had cut themselves off from the science students, though it seemed it wouldn't have done them much good anyway, for the science students were as much in awe of Francesca as they were. Hey, I've just heard. She's Venezuelan, and her father gave her an oil well for her 18th birthday, and hey, you guys aren't interested anymore, is that it? Gould was annoyed. It wasn't often he was the first with some gossip. Paleologue explained. I heard this morning she's the adopted daughter of a Greek shipping magnate and she was given a yacht on her 18th birthday. Naseby found out last night that her father was a Russian prince who moved to Brazil and died there and that her stepfather owns 1 million acres of coffee plantation. She was given her own little jet last Christmas. We know that she does belong to the school flying club. Grilse here heard from a girl in a residence that Francesca is illegitimate and that the Italian ambassador to France sends her jewelry on all special occasions. It comes rather mysteriously by diplomatic courier. So you see, my dear Gould, further gloom. Perhaps all the stories are true. Perhaps none of them are. Perhaps she's the daughter of an illiterate contraceptive king from Gary, Indiana. Paleologue solved the problem, though, without satisfying anyone. Perhaps she's just the sort of girl legends get told about. Paleologue was a poet. They ordered another gloomy round. But there was more that fall than thinking about Francesca. It was a year of friendship. They were all years of friendship then. A year of thinking and growing, a year of love. It was the year Paleologue was going with Lucy, the year Gould met Rachel. Later, in the winter, it was Naseby and Nora. Even DiPaolo took time off from screwing his way through the art school to spend 2 weeks with a girl from the phys ed department. Probably Grilse was going with someone, but with Grilse, you never knew. Paleologue's Lucy was a surprise to everyone, especially Paleologue and Lucy themselves. She was a delightful girl, light and airy, blonde and blue-eyed. Thin, the ethereal thinness of the tuberculoid or the chronically undernourished. She was a typist and had come from a little place 40 miles away. Just the kind of wide place on the road, you know what I mean? Really awful, boy. I couldn't wait to get away from there. Nothing to do but get pregnant and watch the trucks go by. I was going to join the Air Force for a while, and off and on I thought maybe I'd be a nun. The nuns at school, they keep at you, you know, in a little place like that. I mean, it's all right, but you got to get out if you have any ambition, you know. You want to make something of yourself, you have to do it, because no one's going to do it for you, right? And, well, there was this guy. We were going to get married, and I wanted to earn some money first. It costs a lot to set up house these days, but, well, I guess I'll just put it in the bank and hope. I mean, I suppose I shouldn't be telling you about this, but, well, Jack, he was really a great guy in some ways. You'd like him, you really would. He could make you laugh. We had a lot of really great times together, dances and parties. That's one thing about living in the city. You don't find parties like that around here. Everyone's so cold, just a lot of strangers. Back home, we used to... Well, anyway, what was it? Oh, yeah. I was going to tell you about Jackie. This will really kill you. See, we're at a party at my friend Joyce's. Joyce used to have really great parties. Everyone always had a great time. And there was this girl, Pego. That's what we used to call her till she was about 14. Then we started calling her Pigo for the obvious reasons. You know what I mean? Gee, I haven't thought about her for so long. I think she went away somewhere. Got too hot for her. Oh, meow. Aren't I terrible? If you can't say something good about a person. Anyway, Pigo, I shouldn't call her that. Pego was tall and thin, and she wasn't what you call good looking or anything, but she had these legs. She was really proud of them, always wore the shortest skirts around. Anyway, that night she was sort of playing around with these two guys, playing one off against the other, and they were getting sort of teed off with her. I mean, you do that sort of thing, and after a while people get kind of tired of you, right? So these guys got together in the kitchen and sort of talked it over and decided nuts to Pego. They'd take a bottle and go for a ride and get drunk together, and that would show her, and it sure did. Boy, was her nose ever out of joint. She was fit to be tied and started insulting everyone, even poor Joyce, which is really bad manners, if you ask me. So anyway, Jackie, he never had much use for her anyway. Knowing him, it was him that started calling her Pigo. That's just like...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?